Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, a newly discovered audio collage by the late Chaz K, also known as Virtual Renderings. It's about work, why you're doing more of it, and getting paid less for it. I hope you'll stay tuned. Long-time listeners of New World Notes know that I am a fan of the audio collages of the late Chaz K, who is also known as Virtual Renderings. His inventive critiques of politics and society first appeared in 2006. The last was released in 2018. I believe Chaz K died in 2019, though I'm not entirely sure of that. I had found 114 of Chaz K's audio collages, all archived at radioforall.net. But I've just discovered 115th. A lost work, rediscovered. Well, perhaps not so much lost as misfiled, misplaced, and mislabeled. The problem is some ambiguity and duplication of titles, and it looks like behind it all is a computer glitch. The accidentally duplicated title is Observations on Work, and, long story short, the title properly belongs to this very early misplaced work. It dates from June 2006, making it one of Chaz K's earliest compositions, only the fifth of his 115. We will hear practically all of the piece this week and next. I'll need to snip off just a bit to make it fit our time slot. Observations on Work is a fine analysis of American jobs, working conditions, hours, and pay, especially since the neoliberal assault on workers that began in the 1970s. Typically of Chaz K, it weaves together voices saying provocative things and some highly relevant music. This week, the voices belong to Noam Chomsky and Michael Parenti, among others. Let us hear part one of the recently rediscovered Observations on Work by Virtual Renderings, Chaz K. Here is the man himself.
This is a program about work. A four-letter word. One that all of us experience in one form or another for a major portion of our lives. Though a simple four-letter word, work is multidimensional in its effects on both the individual and the greater culture. How it is organized and performed, and how it is shared, as well as its fruits, is what this program will attempt to touch upon through music and the spoken word.
Wake up, America! The American Economic Foundation presents the 90th broadcast of the Wake Up America Radio Forum, the court of open argument where the problems of the nation are analyzed and the voice of the people may be heard. This discussion will center around the future of free competitive enterprise in America. The speakers...
The working class and the employing class have nothing in common. There can be no peace so long as hunger and want are found among millions of the working people, and the few who make up the employing class have all the good things of life. Between these two classes, a struggle must go on until the workers of the world organize as a class, take possession of the earth and the machinery of production, and abolish the wage system.
Get to work!
Life is you work 50 hours a week, couple, both of you work 50 hours a week, put food on the table. The United States, under the Reagan years, ended up with the highest working hours in the world, lowest wages in the industrial world. And you're not only supposed to spend all your time working, you're supposed to spend the rest of your time consuming. That meaning you've got to be maxed out on 5 credit cards. So you're totally under control. You don't have a choice. There's nothing you can do except try to, get by the next day and get more goods that you don't want. The parent-child relationships have declined significantly, even in time spent, because people just don't have time. They're too busy either working or consuming. Teenage kids, their conception of what you do when you're off time is wander through the mall and look at things, things that are so expensive you can't even imagine buying them, and no sane person would want them in the first place. But that's driven into your head from infancy. And the long side of it is the indoctrination that comes from the institutions responsible for the indoctrination of the young, the schools, the churches, and so on and so forth.
You know, there are two theories as to why people fall into debt. One of them says that many people are deprived of adequate income and are subjected to heartless taxes. Being unable to make enough money or keep enough of what they earn, they're forced to borrow on their future labor in the hope that things will get better. As their debt obligation accumulates and more of their income goes into interest payments, they have even less for their own needs and they have to be forced to borrow still more. And caught in this deepening cycle of debt, they're forced to sell their small holdings, their land eventually, and sometimes even themselves or their children into servitude. By the way, Caesar abolished that. Humans could not be reduced to property and could not be sold into servitude because of debt. He laid the groundwork for modern bankruptcy laws. The debt cycle continues to this day, as you know. Whole nations are caught in the debt trap, selling off the land and labor of future generations to international investors at most unfavorable terms.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Everything is commercialized.
Free markets, what does that mean?
We annihilate our enemies.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Con the serfs back into serfdom.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Corporate welfare.
Free markets, what does that mean?
In other words, the formula that has enabled them to a certain extent, the formula they're relying on won't.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Corporate money.
We had to date never seen such cheating.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Money for power, power for money.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Cops and robbers. This is about the abuse of power.
Free markets, what does that mean?
Debt.
$2 to $5 trillion deficit.
The second theory of debt says that people incur debts because they're irresponsible spendthrifts who try to live off thrifty creditors. In this scenario, In this scenario, the roles of victim and victimizer are reversed. The creditor is seen as the victim, and the debtor is seen as the victimizer. And this model, though, I think does explain the behavior of some people. The only thing wrong is that it's applied to the wrong social group, to the poor. In fact, there are some profligate few, la jeunesse dorée, the gilded youth, who come from socially esteemed backgrounds, who live in a grand style, and they have, through history, cultivated the magic art of borrowing forever while paying back never. Such limitless credit, such big credit, though, is more likely to be extended not to the poor farmer or laborer, but to those of gilded heritage.
America's more affordable than ever. Just $19. Now you can get the all-new, powerful, strong, sexy, affordable, great, easy, new extreme. Simple, unrivaled, effective, special, no money down today.
Drain the people, drain them dry. Drain the people, hear them cry. Drain the people, drain them dry, yeah, yeah. Drain the people, watch them die, yeah, yeah.
Some labor history. We're frequently being warned about this or that alien menace. about foreigners or terrorists who might attack our shores. But the perceived threat does not always come from abroad. Throughout much of the 19th century and early 20th century, the business-owned press stoked an anti-radical hysteria among the general public by targeting what they called the dangerous classes within the United States itself. The dangerous classes were, specifically, the poor, the immigrants, the underemployed, and anyone who organized for a decent-paying job and better work conditions. Labor agitation was stigmatized as a threat to the American way of life. True Americanism was equated with an uncritical acceptance of the corporate business system. Industrialists joined with publishers in branding labor activists as communist, anarchist, and un-American. Posters and pictures were circulated showing Uncle Sam guiding American workers away from the swarthy agitators. The term un-American first came into significant usage at the turn of that century as a political epithet during this period when true Americans used it against striking immigrant workers and later against any militant opponents of the economic order, immigrant or native-born. In 1886, during a time of substantial labor unrest, Theodore Roosevelt, himself a rich employer, talked of setting worker against worker in the name of patriotism. Quote, I'm quoting Teddy Roosevelt now, "My men are hard-working, laboring men who work longer hours for no greater wages than most of the strikers. But they are Americans through and through. I believe nothing would give them greater pleasure than a chance with rifles at one of the mobs." So here we had Teddy Roosevelt almost inciting his own workers and glorifying and praising them for their supposed willingness to kill fellow workers. To dilute the labor militancy of its employees, the Ford Motor Company sponsored Americanization programs for them. Patriotism was equated with labor discipline and compliant worker attitudes. Other business firms fashioned programs modeled after Ford's.
Now, some people have too much money. They wear it like a pair of pants. They say there's room for everybody, but you never get a chance. You can't ride that elevator. You can't climb those stairs. Because those people have too much money up there. Now, some people have too much money, and they drive it around like a car. They never pick up hitchhikers unless they know who they are. They all belong to the same club, and they all wear those rings. Those people have too much money, that's the thing. Too much money puts somebody under the bridge. You know it's like water. You scoop it up, the level goes down. And too much money can choke a gift horse. All you want is a drink, but you fall in and drown. You know that French lady meant well when she said they ought to just go eat cake crumbs. She had no idea where poverty came from. Silver spoons and glass slippers, you know, their minds are just a mess. Those people have too much money, I guess. Now, some people have too much money, and I think it's time to make a change. Get some checks and balances going in the game. Get a minimum wage and a maximum wage, too, and let the chips fall. Because those people have too much money, that's all. That's right. Some people have too much money, that's all.
We've gotten used to thinking about the last quarter century as a replay of the Gilded Age. So here we are in Gilded Age 2, waiting for the next progressive era. That is, we're facing a kind of a movie being run in reverse, the dismantling of the reforms that began in the progressive era and came to fruition in the New Deal and were extended even under Dwight Eisenhower and were expanded in the 1960s, Medicare and Medicaid. So since Reagan came to power, we've been looking at the dismantling of this huge network of social services and government solutions to social problems. In an era of neoliberalism, in other words, we're looking back to the late 19th century era of laissez-faire liberalism, and we seem to be living history, we seem to be violating the rule that history doesn't repeat itself. And yet, the changes that we face today in the nature of the world economy are important to note. Although the capitalism was internationalized at the beginning of the 20th century, it was not globalized the way it is today. The capitalism of that era was industrially driven. Today, it's driven by consumption. The biggest corporation then was United States Steel Corporation. Today, it's Walmart, a quarter of a trillion dollar operation.
Business, business everywhere runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse before this place really burst. Business, business everywhere. Babies use the word before they learn to walk the stairs. Anybody here say World Trade Organization? Perpetuating, exploiting peoples, tribes, and nations. Let's see if we can see how far back bad business started. Long before the pharaohs and the day the sea was parted. When Moses led the slaves through the waves to be saved. But tell me, did things really change? Look around the world, the top to down, it's getting awful strange. Bad business getting poor people in a tizziness. Makes them want to blow up Babylon so high it's dizziness. Business at the center of the WTO. World Trade, what OWTC center? You know, a disaster. Business making pollution grow faster. Made a crook of the doctor and the pastor. Took the president and made of him a bastard. And sells to you the rip-off rapper on your ghetto blaster. Who wants money first and justice second? I'm wrecking this. Throw the merchants out the church. They're begging for a king-size downfall. Beggars in the street because of y'all. Let it be known that dirty business made the world trade fall. Not terrorism, but businessism itself. Like the media putting war flicks on your shelf. A lot of wealth in your daily news and TV too. Papers, capers, congressmen are just escapers, it's true. Yeah, Oh, while the refugees go. Do, 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 do. Business, business everywhere earns the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even rebel music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth? Determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse before this place really bursts.
You'll never win the lottery. On the other hand, the chances are pretty good that you'll slave away at some miserable job the rest of your life. That's because you were in all likelihood born into the wrong social class. Let's face it, you're a member of the working caste. Sorry. As a result, you don't have the education, upbringing, connections, manners, appearance, and good taste to ever become one of us. In fact, you'd probably need a book the size of the Yellow Pages to list all the unfair advantages we have over you. That's why we're so relieved to know that you still continue to believe all those silly fairy tales about justice and equal opportunity in America. Of course, in a hierarchical social system like ours, there's never been much room at the top to begin with. Besides, it's already occupied by us. And we like it up here so much that we intend to keep it that way. But at least there's usually someone lower in the social hierarchy you can feel superior to and kick in the teeth once in a while. Even a lowly dishwasher can easily find some poor slob further down in the pecking order to sneer and spit at. So be thankful for migrant workers, prostitutes, and homeless street people. Always remember that if everyone like you were economically secure and socially privileged like us, there would be no one left to fill all those boring, dangerous, low-paid jobs in our economy, and no one to fight our wars for us or blindly follow orders in our totalitarian corporate institutions, and certainly no one to meekly go to their grave without having lived a full and creative life. So please, keep up the good work. You also probably don't have the same greedy, compulsive drive to possess wealth, power, and prestige that we have, and even though you may sincerely want to change the way you live, you're also afraid of the very change you desire, thus keeping you and others like you in a nervous state of limbo. So you go through life mechanically, playing your assigned social role, terrified what others would think should you ever dare to break out of the mold. Naturally, we try to play you off against each other whenever it suits our purposes. High-waged workers against low-waged, unionized against non-unionized, black against white, male against female, American workers against Japanese, against Mexican against... We continually push your wages down by invoking foreign competition, the law of supply and demand, national security, or the bloated federal deficit. We throw you on the unemployed scrap heap if you step out of line or jeopardize our profits, and to give you an occasional break from the monotony of our daily economic blackmail, we allow you to participate in our staged, managed electoral shell games, better known to you ordinary folks as elections. Happily, you haven't a clue as to what's really happening. Instead, you blame aliens, tree-hugging environmental wackos, bastards, feminazis, welfare queens, and countless others for your troubled situation. We're also very pleased that many of you still embrace the work ethic, even though most jobs in our economy degrade the environment, undermine your physical and emotional health, and basically suck your one and only life right out of you. We obviously don't know much about work, but we're sure glad you do. Of course, life could be different. Society could be intelligently organized to meet the real needs of the general population. You and others like you could collectively fight to free yourselves from our domination. But you don't know that. In fact, you can't even imagine that another way of life is possible. And that's probably the greatest, most significant achievement of our system. Robbing you of your imagination, your creativity, your ability to think and act for yourself. So we'd truly like to thank you from the bottom of our heartless hearts. Your loyal sacrifice makes possible our corrupt luxury. Your work makes our system work. Thanks so much for knowing your place without even knowing it.
The ruling class consists largely of the politically active members of the owning class, plus new and faithful recruits from below, such as Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon, Henry Kissinger, Bill Clinton. All of them came from very modest backgrounds, Lyndon Johnson, but they ended up being millionaires. Helping and serving the rich usually ends up with you yourself being rich. From the beginning of the Republic to modern times, the top leadership positions, including the presidency, vice presidency, the president's cabinet, and the Supreme Court, have rested predominantly in the hands of white males from wealthy families, with most of the remainder being of upper middle class origin, that is, moderately successful business people, commercial farmers, and professionals. Legend has it that many U.S. presidents rose from humble origins. In fact, almost all came from families of a higher socioeconomic status than about 90% of the U.S. population.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I can put this differently. The new world order's gonna get hurt just by being me. Cause I ain't seen nothing but hype, no controversy. And so it looks like this time it might have to be me. So, yeah, confidentially, it's my personal business how the rockstar gets fame. Exploiting poor folks to get rich, so tell me who's to blame. Shame on you, you poser, wake up, party's over. Kill the Land Rover, army buggy, sold the world over. Yeah, the world is soon to be over. The way this here deal's going down, that's why it's my personal business how the Bush and Cheney families been doing business with the Hussein Laden families.
Who owns America? Contrary to a widely accepted view, this country's wealth doesn't belong to a broad middle class. The richest 1% own 60% of all corporate stock and all business assets. They own close to 90% of all tax-free bonds. True, some 40% of families own some stocks or bonds, but almost all of these have total holdings of less than $2,000. Taking into account their debts and mortgages, 90% of American families have little or no net assets. The greatest source of individual wealth is inheritance. If you're not rich, it's probably because you lack the foresight to pick the right parents at birth. Studies show that rags to riches is a rare exception. It happens sometimes, but most people, the overwhelming majority, die in the class to which they were born. A large majority of the self-made Forbes 400 super rich inherited their fortunes, or they received crucial startup capital from a family member. The trend has been toward greater economic inequality. Corporate profits have more than doubled in the last decade. Income from investments has grown 2 to 3 times faster than income from work. The 500 largest U.S. industrial corporations more than doubled their assets in the last 15 years, while shedding over 5 million jobs. And the years that follow brought the highest level of corporate profitability in the post-war era, and probably the highest level of profitability in human history.
Here we must pause. Chaz Kay's rediscovered collage, Observations on Work. More to come next week. Our show's website is newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening to New World Notes. Illegitimi non carborundum, keep trying to live each day as though the truth were true, and please tune in again next week. Till then.